Do you know what right fuel, right time means when it comes to using sports nutrition products and maximizing your body's fuel sources? If not, you definitely want to tune in to this episode. Welcome to the Inside Sports Nutrition Podcast, your source for all things sports nutrition related. The show is hosted by myself, Dina Griffin, and my awesome co-host, Bob Sibahar. We are both registered dietitians and board certified specialists in sports dietetics with combined professional experience exceeding 40 years. We're here to translate nutrition and sports science research to real life, give you some awesome interviews with a variety of experts and athletes along the way so you can enhance your knowledge to optimize your health, your fitness, and athletic performance. On today's episode, we have a great interview and conversation with Leighton Phillips, who is the founder of S Fuels. And we're going to talk with him about the origin of the S Fuels company, the array of different products, the ingredients, why they create the products that they do, and really thinking outside of the traditional box for how we fuel athletes. So you definitely want to have an open mind if you are used to very traditional paradigms for fueling athletes, but don't go away. You want to be here for this conversation with Leighton Phillips. Before we get to the episode, just want to give a little shout out to all of you. Thank you for being an avid listener. We really do appreciate you following along and would love for you to just take a minute and leave a 5-star rating on your Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It only takes a second to do in the app, but it does help us to continue to grow. We are a small entity and we do everything ourselves with our producer and all self-funded. So we appreciate you being here with us. Thank you. And now let's get to the show.
All right, Dina, I am always super excited for our podcast, but this one in particular, because our guest shares a similar philosophy of us, and that is, you know, stabilizing blood sugar, improving the body's fat adaptation response. So I am super pumped to welcome Leighton Phillips, the founder of S Fuels. But first, Dina, how are you this morning?
I'm good. I'm super excited as well, Bob.
I am too. I want to jump into this. Leighton, thank you so much for taking taking the time just out of your busy schedule. We've been looking forward to this conversation for quite a while. We've been jazzed. We've been doing our research, but thank you, number one, for just taking the time to just chat with us.
Oh, it's great. Great to meet you both. And feels like we're probably talking similar language. So look forward to jumping in a few topics we want to go deep on, Bob.
Absolutely.
Nice to meet you, Dina. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's do this. Obviously, we have a lot of our listeners are around the world and some have heard of S Fuel, some have not. Obviously, we'll put all of this in the show notes. So listeners, you can find out all these, you can find the links, you can find everything we're talking about here in the show notes. But Leighton, just, you know, your background is fascinating and in your philosophy, but what sparked, I'm always curious when a product company kind of comes up on the market, like what Right. sparked the interest in developing S Fuels? What was the idea? What was the onus behind you developing a sport nutrition product company?
Yeah, I guess like a lot of products, right, in this industry, it comes about some type of problem statement that an athlete runs into themselves. And for us, it's been a bit of a genesis on that. But I would say that, and we were in Hong Kong at the time, doing a lot of ultra running, you know, I guess had a background in that. And we were just noticing just what we thought was unique to ourselves with firstly, just inflammatory issues and gut issues. It was just us. And, you know, my background in naturopathic medicine, I just started looking at to find out that it's actually highly studied. And there's just a lot of sports science research that was calling this out. And I just felt like there's better we could do here. And, you know, honestly, like that's where it began. And it was on one hand, just constraining, if you will, the volume or the intensity of training. And therefore, not directly initially, the problem statement wasn't directly constraining performance or tied to performance, but it was only later when we got into labs and we started really working at a nutritional level where we started to really have direct connections between different substrate use and performance outcomes So it's been an evolving thing, Bob. And to be honest, like a lot of people say, SF, you know, is that San Francisco? Is that, what is that? Well, you know, when we started, it was all about, you know, when we were thinking about spiking and the effects of, you know, very fluctuating blood sugar responses, you know, spike free was the basis of the SF and S fuels. Mm-hmm. And all of the research we were doing on product development was, well, which substrates had that, you know, either glycogenic or insulinogenic, you know, reaction in the body. So that's kind of some of the color of the brand and of the company.
I love that. Why, you know, because again, this there's so much parallel between this and metabolic efficiency training, which is kind of the concept that I dubbed and created almost 20 years ago. Why the spike? Like what really, because I get this question a lot too. Like why do you talk so much about blood sugar ebbs and flows and spikes and this and that? Because we know there's a lot of biology and biochemistry behind it. But what was it for you in developing the product? What was it about that blood sugar spike? Like what was the why behind that? So our listeners understand why that may or may not be advantageous to their health and performance.
Yeah. As I said, initially it was more this kind of, I was just noticing, and particularly in where we were at the time in Hong Kong. And then, as I say, I found out it was more broad than that. But basically, extremities were having swelling, you know, and particularly, you know, you could get away with this in like your 10K, 1 hour sessions, but you started getting into 3 and 4 hour sessions. And you were getting, you know, both in the toes and the fingers, noticeable inflammatory responses. And, you know, I thought it was just tied out to the humidity and the ambient, right, temperatures and what have you. But when I started playing around with different substrates, and I was just using off-the-shelf products at the time, which were high, you know, classic fructose, glucose formulations, and then, you know, classic working in the kitchen and started playing around with things ourselves, and only to find out that this inflammation was coming down. And it might sound a small thing, but that was the difference being able to do on the weekend. And I was in my late 40s at the time, you know, going from 30 kilometers with ibuprofen at the end of it to being able to do, you know, 100 kilometer weeks and no medication required. So, you know, I could ramp the volume and certainly be more prepared going into these sessions. That's where it began. Yeah. As we got into labs, and we've ran now 8 projects with specific professional elite athletes to understand more about direct links between substrates and either aerobic adaption improvements and the speed of which you can influence or accentuate those aerobic adaptions. So think mitochondrial biogenesis, fat oxidation, lactate clearance, these classic things we look at, that came later. But we certainly saw a relationship between, you know, training every day, if you will, on different forms of, mostly in the market today, it's maltodextrin and fructose.
Right.
Training on that every day and what the implications of that were. And so we've come to learn a lot since then. Maybe we can chat about some of those projects with the elites and the pros, but we've learned a lot since then.
I love that. And did GI distress, gastrointestinal distress, come anywhere into this timeline? Was that early?
Yeah. So for me personally, it didn't. But as I got like into studying this, both in sports science research, you know, that was consistent that it was high carbohydrate dosage per hour that was one of the most consistent factors associated with reasons for DNFs in the endurance sport racing, you know, sport. Mm-hmm. Both in Ironman, UTMB, a lot of the sports science research that was done there was showing that DNFs were most related to than anything else was to gut and GI distress. And, you know, for us actually, and everything we talk about today is like on our first generation, you know, IP, and we've just been working for the past 18 months on a second generation and it comes out soon. But in that, even since the first generation, and as we go into the second generation, every product that we've produced for training and racing has some specific nutrients around gut resilience, namely glutamine and some very specific, essentially fatty acids out of the medium chain family. Each of these have very, in fact, in clinical medicine, when I was practicing as a naturopathic practitioner, we would use this in clinical medicine to treat gut membrane issues. So We've built that into every product from the very beginning, and we're going to take that to another level as we go into our second generation products.
It's super exciting to learn more about, Leighton. For those, I'm thinking of the listeners that are pretty brand new to S-Fuels and the line of products, and you're kind of getting into some of the unique features of some of the products we're going to expand on here. But just before we get into talking more of the products, for those who are new to S-Fuels and thinking of the zillion other sports nutrition products out there, could you maybe that higher level, like the kind of sports nutrition that S-Fuels offers, classifying that, categorizing that, maybe distinguishing from the bulk? And you've been hinting at it, but if you had to summarize a couple of the key aspects there in terms of the other products on the market and what makes S-Fuels so unique.
Sure. No, happy to, Dina. I think I would probably say that, I mean, this is kind of rough, but like, if you look at the market in general, you can classify it, and probably 95%+ sits in the high carbohydrate centric formulation structure, if you will. Then there's more recent, and inside of that, more recently, of course, there's some work on hydrogel, which is quite interesting. And then parallel to that, you have, if you will, the other end of the rainbow, which is like core keto, effectively no carb. And from our perspective, we felt like S-Fuels doesn't naturally land into any of those, because we feel like basic science, textbook science, this is not even like, you know, modern research, textbook science would show us that as you ramp intensities, the ratio of different substrates changes as you go from sitting on a couch to, you know, VO2 max 400s around a track. It's it's very different energy systems, and they're quite compartmentalized. But what's interesting is that those energy systems can be, you know, dramatically trained, both in training and with nutrition. And so the way we think about the classification then of S-Fuels is that we don't think this is about a single substrate. All of these substrates have a function. The question is, what substrate actually improves the adaptions the most in those different intensities? We sit in zone two aerobic, we get into different thresholds, aerobic, anaerobic thresholds, and ultimately VO2 max. You know, how the body uses those different substrates at those intensities changes. And we know, as I said, since we first began, and then the projects and the lab work we've done since then, certain substrates can really accentuate those adaptions. And conversely, if you're using, we think, the wrong substrates at those different intensities, you can blunten the adaptions. So we've structured our products, and we classify ourselves. We talk about this right fuel, right time concept. And essentially all that's saying is that at different times or different intensities, we think there's a better way to use these different substrates, these different fuels. And we've formulated the products to that end, going from, if you will, that aerobic into threshold and into race day formulation. And, you know, we think that's very much in keeping with just how the body works. It's not just a new concept. It's the foundations of just how metabolic systems work in the body.
Leighton, I just want to tell you that I have wanted to jump out of my chair and hug you about 10 million times when you were just talking about that. Because honestly, I feel like you and I have been on the same paths. We're almost like the brothers that never knew each other, right? But then we have this reunion and we find each other via some genetic testing or whatever. I'm like, oh my gosh. Everything that you're saying is actually the philosophy that I built my sport nutrition practice on, with biochemistry and literally like textbook metabolic data, right? And just the way the body works. And even I love the right fuel, right time, because I've always been a proponent of eating to support your training needs, right? So it's periodizing your training, depending on the zone, depending on the training cycle. I mean, it seems like I said, we've been on parallel paths, me kind of trying to use food to do that, to try to impart a daily nutrition plan for athletes. Right. And then you trying to solve the question, well, what do you do before, during, and after training? So it's like that nutrient timing window.
Yeah.
So I had,
I think a couple of things there, Bob. Like, I mean, firstly, I don't want to take away from what happens outside of training. In fact, there was a really interesting meta study done by some of Dan's PhD students that they looked at. I think they originally looked at 8,000, but they took 4,000 subjects out of the study that didn't fit, if you will, in the requirements, but they got down to 4,000 thereabouts athletes that had run through a substrate test. And, you know, duration of aerobic sessions and diet outside of like, you know, factors like sex and age, which you couldn't affect, duration of aerobic zone two sessions and diet, and particularly the amount of fat in the diet, were the two most influential factors of fat oxidation efficiency. So as much as S-Fuels is focused on what you just said is pre, during, after training and racing, massive factor in it all is just how much fat is in the diet, because that can obviously ramp or, you know, obviously blunten your fat oxidation efficiency.
It can. And I hope our listeners just listen to that one more time. Pause it, rewind, and listen to what Leighton just said, because literally what you put in your body, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, like whatever your thing is, that teaches your body to either, and I've always said this, you can teach your body through food to use more carbohydrate and store fat, or use more fat and store carbohydrate. Now, time and place, right? It depends on the athlete, depends on the zone, what we're trying to do, but that's what we're trying to get through to everyone is like, you have to choose your substrates. You have to choose the foods, because those do different jobs in your body. And I think out are the days, well, I hope out are the days. I think we're moving past the days where people are just like, yeah, I'll just eat the same thing every single day. And I know we kind of fall into that, but we do need to kind of step back and periodize our daily food intake, but also our sport nutrition. And that's, we're going to start launching into the products, because I want to learn more about the S-Fuels products, and our listeners do also. Because there is, it's the right fuel for the right time, right? And we're really looking at what we're doing and what do we need to achieve on the track, in the pool, in the water, wherever it is. And then how do we fuel ourselves to prepare for that, correct?
But it was interesting, like, I mean, there was some work done recently on some products in the market that were suggesting, well, let's personally create a product for an athlete. Well, even with that, it got down to a single product, and it just had the assumption that nothing changed for the athlete. Well, every workout is a different situation. And if it's, what are we in? We're in March. Well, what I'm doing in May as I get closer to racing season, my workout structure changes, my requirements change. So we felt like it wasn't about a custom product point in time, but actually it's quite a flexible nutrition requirement as you change. A lady and a man has different requirements, different types of the season, race season, off season. So we felt like what you needed was different levers that you could pull on in the way of, you know, substrate and fuels at different points in the year.
Absolutely. And even to kind of go on that is the substrates and fuels, and then the ingredients that are now kind of consisting in these sport nutrition products. And I'll just tell you, you know, I kind of work in an old school, new school, you know, philosophy. And I believe the old school is a lot of what you mentioned earlier, like products that have glucose and fructose, or just simple sugar, glucose, maltodextrin, whatever. I do believe, I mean, again, time and place, I get it, but I believe that is a little bit more old school. We're having a lot more science and research influence where we're going in the sport nutrition market, product market. And that's one thing that, you know, I really respect about what you're doing with S-Fuels and bringing in your background and being a clinician, being a naturopathic practitioner. I love that, because you're looking at the science. So if we can transition into you maybe not highlighting the products yet, let's go ingredients first. Like, what made you choose some of the ingredients? And again, you alluded to some of these earlier, but take us through these important ingredients that you think are really highlights of some of the products and why they are so important.
Yeah. Maybe just at a higher level, I would just say that firstly, if you go back on some of the, let's just say, forefathers of sports nutrition science, like Jukendrup and these folks, many of them have been working in the labs on understanding how a fructose and a maltodextrin work together all by themselves, or a different medium chain triglyceride. They all have a function. And this is, I get really worried when we get into extremes where you just start carving out and excluding groups of foods. I think all of these foods have a time and a place, and you know, when you use them and how much you use them is really the question. So let me just start with that.
Okay.
We started working with Dan in 2018. We had already started developing a hydration fueling drink for training, specifically zone two training. And so the basis of that then required that if it's going to accentuate aerobic adaptions, it would not need to have anything that would trigger an insulogenic response, because that would obviously blunten fat oxidation. So we started with excluding, if you will, your classic sugars, right? And all the different formats of that. And we chose some specific fatty acids out of the medium chain grouping. So this is from, they say, you know, the number of carbons that determine, if you will, whether it's short chain or medium or long chain. Mm-hmm. And we chose these two, C8 and C10. And more recently, research is showing actually that, you know, these have been known for a long time to come through the gut very efficiently. Now, it was assumed that no transporters were required to actually take those fatty acids into muscle cell, into heart tissue, like another muscle, but, you know, cardiac heart, muscle. Mm-hmm. But actually, more recent research, you know, looking at very detailed tracking of that those particular MCTs, each MCT has a different profile on whether it does or does not need transporters, and it's different for every tissue. So how it happens into the kidney, the liver, the heart, and the muscle is quite different. These two particular MCTs do need the transporter. And the reason I bring that out is we're going to soon get into some of the other products, and particularly we've built a product called Primed, and it has carnitine and caffeine in it. I'm going to come back to that. But I guess my point would be is that as we firstly built this first product, we chose these two MCTs. At the time, if you look at the market, any of the MCT powder-based products were built on the way of fusing maltodextrin to the MCT, which is totally orthogonal to what you were trying to do, because the maltodextrin would boost in your blood sugar response and an insulin response, and you'd never get the results. So we had to firstly work on the first gen product that would fuse collagen to MCT and put that in the formula. We also put some electrolytes in there. And we started working with glutamine right from the very beginning. At the beginning, the glutamine was used mostly because of its response to the gut and helping to build gut resilience. As we go forward into our second generation, that will take a far more central role as actually a really efficient substrate also that is non-glycogenic. So anyway, the aerobic product, if you will, zone two, long, slow distance, where you're really trying to accentuate the classic adaptions of aerobic efficiency, which is fat oxidation, mitochondrial density, and also, you know, lipolysis, et cetera. That's why we built that product. And if you look at the formula and people look at it and they see it's 60 calories, they say, well, hey, I'm burning 1,000 calories or 800 calories an hour when I'm even zone two out there for 5 hours. What's this going to do for me? That's the actual intention of the product. You're trying to stimulate the body to force it to have to actually get really efficient at using its own fat. And these nutrients will help do that. So that's kind of the first, you know, set of ingredient. Core ingredient is some of those specific, medium chain triglycerides and glutamine. And then we excluded maltodextrin. Again, this was purely for aerobic zone two type training. We then Dave Scott was working with us in the early days on some of this too. And you know, Dave quickly pointed out, you know, that's always the base of training. And you know this, you both know this for endurance sport. Even if you talk to professional cyclists, they'll tell you, even in the heart of racing season, the bulk of their training is still zone two.
Right.
So the first point. But 20% of the training was then, if you will, zone four, high intensity interval training, what have you, in different forms, depending if you're a track athlete or a marathon runner or Ironman athlete, et cetera. But what we realized is that, and we were kind of like at the time, it was kind of interesting. We were almost like challenge. We were being challenged ourselves on our beliefs because I felt like we started as the company on this, you know, spike free concept. So everything was about, you know, no sugar and no carbohydrate. But as we got into this, and then Dave started and Dan started working with us, we realized, well, hey, you up the intensity for both training, and zone four is typically what a lot of the, you know, half Ironman, marathon, half marathon, that's the intensity you race at. Mm-hmm. And in those intensities, you see it on a classic VO2 max substrate test. You'll start to see that the oxidation of carbohydrate increases. I think the interesting thing that's becoming more apparent, that the classic textbook here would suggest, that as you get into those higher intensities, aerobic to anaerobic thresholds, the textbook was telling us that your fat oxidation would like taper off. In fact, it would go to zero. Mm-hmm. And increasingly more modern research, is a fantastic set of research papers over the last year with Noakes and a few other folks that showed that actually you can still highly train fat oxidation at higher intensities, and the carbohydrate oxidation just begins to increase as an incremental substrate on top of a efficient fat oxidation. So it's not just your classic crossover curve, but you'll actually begin to see the fat oxidation continuing and then the carbohydrate ramping. So we built the second products, which was around racing in that more zone four space. Mm-hmm. And that's where we began to use different forms of cyclic dextrin and maltodextrin. And, you know, that's where we've kind of focused from a substrate perspective. We are working on a second generation gel product that is using another substrate on top of that, meaning energy-based substrate. Mm-hmm. And I would just say that, look, gels are not made for sitting on the couch watching TV. Gels are for the, you know, finishing the run leg of a triathlon, or if you're a marathon, typically they're obviously taking it through the marathon. So it will not be the product to watch your favorite TV show with, right?
Yeah.
It's built for racing.
Yeah, it'll be high intensity workouts, racing. Right. Were you, right. I mean, are you guys in your education, like, are you trying to kind of impart that with consumers? Like, this is your aerobic training. Okay, good.
Absolutely. In fact, if you look at our usage guide, all of our, when we say you go from like an aerobic session, it doesn't matter so much because you're just using the train product, which doesn't have any sugar in it. But as you get into higher intensity tempo sessions, what we say is for the first 30 minutes, use nothing. And there's a real science behind that guide. It sounds simple, but the real science of it is that depending upon intensity of the beginning of a training session, the transporters that take sugar out of the blood or glucose out of the blood into the muscle cells, that takes a little bit of time for those to open up. These are insulin independent transporters, right? Like GLUT4 and what have you. They have to come from inside the cell to the cell edge, open the door and allow the glucose to come in. That takes a little bit of time. Once that's open, however, it's pretty rapid for the sugar to, you know, come out of the gut into the blood, and then it's coming through into the muscle cell, and it does that without insulin. And why that's important is because it's at that point we can parallelize, you know, both glucose oxidation and fat oxidation very efficiently. It's when you start at the beginning of your workout, or more worse, in a lot of cases, we see a lot of, you know, taking a gel before you start the workout, you're immediately shutting down your fat oxidation, and you're immediately becoming dependent on carbohydrate oxidation.
And then you burn through the stores so quickly, and we don't have a lot of stores, especially smaller females. I mean, that's the whole, that's the problem I see with, and it's still happening.
Into the crash and the spikes, right?
Yeah, I feel it was a lot more prominent about 10 to 15 years ago, because you would see every triathlete or runner right before the start with their gel packets. They were just sucking it down, throwing it on the ground or whatever, hopefully in a trash can. But yeah, I think times have been changing, and I do want to bring out your usage guides. Those are so comprehensive, and as an educator myself, I just want to say thank you for that, because it is it's easy to read. I've had some of my athletes read it too, because sometimes, you know, the three of us will read something and makes total sense to us. But sometimes listeners who don't have any science background, they're like, what is this saying? I haven't gotten that feedback yet with your usage guide.
So we are redoing it, because we do feel like it's still too complex.
Okay.
We're going to make it simpler. But maybe I would just say, just on that whole point about, if you will, before a workout, and this is kind of gets into the ingredients of this primed, that's the name of our product, but just talking about the ingredients and why we use it is, so there's really three major aspects to really efficient fat oxidation, right? One is the lipolysis, right? The breaking down of the fat. The second is the transport. And the third is the oxidation, right? And if you look at the part whereby, okay, so fatty acids either that you've consumed or that you have broken down in the fatty tissue and it gets released into the blood. Okay, so now you got to get it from the blood into the muscle cell for oxidation, and particularly into the mitochondria. And carnitine is a, you know, critical factor in that. And for a long time, there was a lot of research done that was trying to show that if you increase your carnitine, you would increase the carnitine in the muscle cell, and therefore you'd be able to increase your fat oxidation. And not many of, almost all of those studies were unsuccessful. And there was a study done, I think 2011, first time they showed how they could affect this. And the way they were affecting it was impractical, but it began to show different factors that were influencing how carnitine could be upregulated in the muscle cell and thereby increasing fat oxidation. And that first study was using like 80 grams of carbohydrate, which is just, you know, horrendous. In fact, they found that in the study that athletes were also beginning to put weight on in this methodology. But what they began to show is you actually could affect carnitine uptake. The next study was showing the use of caffeine to do the same. And since then, what they've found is that the mixing of caffeine and the actual mechanical action of the muscle contracting, those two things can increase the flux of carnitine, if you will, into the muscle cell, particularly into the mitochondria, where it can begin to facilitate better fat movement for oxidation. So the whole concept of our primed product to use before training sessions is to up level through caffeine and carnitine. And obviously, as you begin the training session, these things coming together helps get the magic of improving that oxidation efficiency. One thing I would say with that also, you know, there's the caffeine aspect as it relates to cognitive improvement, right? But when you get into really upregulating fat oxidation with caffeine, most of the studies, both male and female, would suggest that it needs to be in the 2.5 to 3 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. And, you know, the problem with coffees and teas, there's no problem with coffees and teas, but accepting that it's like there's a 300 to 400% difference in caffeine depending upon the bean you use and how you process it and how you drink it and blah, blah, blah. So what we've built is a measured dose so that you could really build a structured way to understand, okay, if I'm 70 grams and it's 3 milligrams per kilogram, or I need, you know, 210 milligrams. Okay, so how do I dose for that? So that's why we built those ingredients and into that product.
I was curious, Leighton, with regard to the carnitine, is there a role, do you see, for athletes to supplement carnitine outside of their use for what's in that prime product or the couple of the other products to get that added benefit, like where we're at with the dosing?
You really need to be in the, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 grams per day to really build, you know, that carnitine loading of the muscle. So, look, I think if you look at most diets today, they're going to just need to be fairly dense in protein to kind of, you know, contribute to that. Supplementation does help, absolutely. I would start with diet always. But my sense is for an athlete that's looking for a very, you know, specific outcome, it's quite programmable by supplementation, whereas diet, it's a little hit and miss, right? So yeah.
Okay. And also, with regard to the collagen peptides, not in the Prime product, but in a couple of the other products. Yeah. Could you speak to the efficacy or benefit of that, if that's some synergistic roles or otherwise?
I'd like to tell you that it's, you know, there for a functional purpose, but at the dosage we use it, it's actually really just a binding agent to the MCT. When you run it through a process of freeze drying, you got to bind it to something. Mm-hmm. So we chose collagen on our first generation product. And at those dosages, it would have very little effect, to be quite frank. It's low cost. It's not a sugar. Mm-hmm. So that's why we chose it. But a couple of problems. One is, well, suddenly the product is not vegan friendly. Right. So, so that's why we've looked at it at our second generation product.
Right.
And we think we've been now to now, well, we know now we've run through a whole bunch of work with some manufacturers to fuse another ingredient to the MCT. So we are actually going to take the collagen out because it was not functional. And we're putting another substrate in there. And you'll next month, we'll talk about that.
All right.
but that will, you'll then have basically two non-glycogenic substrates fused together into a new sports nutrition ingredient in the market. Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you.
You gained even more of my respect, Leighton, just from that answer of collagen. And listeners, if you caught that, it's literally you told 100% truth. Like, here's why it's in there. You reference the what I call clinically effective dosage. So I just, again, just props to you for all of that and being so transparent. I get this question a lot, and I'm sure Dina does, and I'm sure you do also, Leighton. So, and I know it totally depends on the person using it, but where would someone start with the S Fuels line? And you can make up the athlete if you want to, but where, because you guys have a lot of great products, where would you point them just to start with? Yeah. To introduce them.
I mean, it gets a little bit back, Bob, too.
Yeah.
If an athlete only had, you know, 15 hours a week to train with,
right,
what would the highest priority be for the training? And you know, Dan would say, I wouldn't even have them do an ounce of high intensity training. I would just, if you only had 10 to 15 hours, I would focus it all on zone two.
Yep.
And in that context, you know, let's just assume there's good consistency across the week, right? In that context, I would say, you know, caffeine and carnitine loading and our train product would be the most effective to support. And that probably actually talks to a lot of the market, because a lot of the market, we're all got day jobs.
Right, exactly.
So I would start there and just really looking to prime that, you know, fat oxidation efficiency, the aerobic capacity, aerobic adaptions. Because honestly, for that athlete, when they're getting into a 4 to 12 hour race, mm-hmm. most of that is going to be on race day sitting in zone three and zone two. I mean, they'll have some competitive bits either through elevation changes, heat, or they get to the end and they're trying to race someone, right?
Yeah, but yeah.
Mostly it's going to be in the middle zones. And for that matter, all of that can be best optimized with zone two adaptions, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how about the, I don't want to say traditional because it's changing a little bit, but I'm going to put my coach hat on really quick. Your traditional Ironman athlete, age grouper, who doesn't have a lot of time, right? So they get up at oh dark 30 and they're just like, it seems like, and I've coached a lot of these guys and gals, and you know, I've tried to impart those messages of not doing this, but they seem to try to go redline a lot more than they should because of time. Because they figure, oh, if I only have an hour, I'm gonna bang this out. So what say ye about those type of individuals who might be pushing a little bit over what they should be in training? Is there a different product to support them there if they're not going to change their training?
You know, I would, the two things I would do with that is like, look, typically they do that during the week as a function of not having time during the week. And then a Saturday and Sunday, they've got more time to work with. So I would generally, firstly, if it's going to be more high intensity work during the week, I would just say that, hey, for the first 30 minutes, either use train or water, our train product or water, just to let the system firstly switch on and allow those, like I said earlier, those channels for glucose to open up in an insulin independent way. And then after that, use our Race Plus product, which has carbohydrate. Gotcha. That all said, if during the week your sessions are like 1 hour, frankly, I would say stay with water and train still and have your breakfast after the event or after the training or what have you. And in that breakfast, add your carbohydrate because you should have plenty between the liver and the muscle glycogen to deal with that. The other aspect too there, Bob, is to answer for those athletes that are doing more high intensity work is, you know, what you do the night before can have some bearing. I mean, in the way of what you eat, I would probably, if that's your training kind of operational model, I would probably the night before hold off on the amount of carbohydrate. Mm-hmm. I would though take caffeine going into the session for two reasons. One is just mental cognitive embracing the session. And secondly, to trigger the fat oxidation a little more. And then after the session, you know, add your carbohydrate in whole foods, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's breakfast or lunch or what have you. So that's how I would think about it. We have some pros and elites right now that are kind of really doing a lot between Dan's training methodology. We're doing some athletes that are working with the Norwegian method. And there is a lot of fluctuation between the night before what you do before training and what you do after training. But consistently, I would just say that generally speaking, there would be a, you know, holding off on carbohydrate or lowering the amount of carbohydrate the night before, go into the session with some caffeine and then have your carbohydrate after the session. And again, this is more classically your 1 hour training session. If you start getting into 2 hour training sessions and you're doing multiple sessions either in the day or you got good back-to-back consistency through the week, we do think you should be adding carbohydrate in the session if they're of that high intensity nature.
Yeah. So this, it's interesting you brought up. So Dan, just for the listeners to reference, as Dan, who Leighton is referencing, is Dan Plews. And we'll put links to Dan and you can check out one of our past podcast episodes because we did interview Dan. But because you brought up Dan's methods and then the Norwegian methods, can you just talk about those briefly and maybe in a few minutes kind of factor in kind of the elite studies that you were talking about? Because what I'm trying to get at is what athletes are really benefiting from this type of philosophy of training nutrition? Yeah.
Sure. Well, I mean, just the background, Dan's a performance physiologist, doctor in that. He himself holds the Ironman world record in Kona in 2018 when we worked together on that. He just actually won the he won the California Ironman outright recently.
Yep.
So a very capable athlete himself. Published over 100 papers, research papers. He is the super coach, if you will, for Chelsea Sodaro, Aaron Royal, was for Jan van Berkel before he retired. And he's on the board at S-Fuels. Dr. Mickey Wellerden is on our board also, and they're really kind of guiding us on, you know, the science aspects of this as they research it. But, you know, as much as, you know, we put this term right fuel, right time together, Dan has also adopted that terminology in the way that he talks about his training protocols. And, you know, it's very much a periodized construct in training and a periodized construct in the application of different fuel substrates for that training. So, you know, obviously front half of the season, probably more aerobic base. As you get closer, you begin to periodize different high intensity work, very high level. But similarly in the substrate construct. Now, in the Norwegian method, some of our very recent pros that we're working with are using some of those aspects, and they talk a lot about these, you know, double training days and in fact, double high intensity training days. And you know, that's been kind of interesting for us to just overlay our methodology of substrate use to that method. And it's not so much about, there's no difficulty of doing that as it relates to the fuel used in the training, but just getting really sharp also on what you do going into those, that type of structure, like of a training session or a training block, and then what you do after the training, more in the spirit of recovery from what you just did and setting yourself up for the afternoon second session.
Right.
So it's been really interesting because, you know, whilst fat is a big component of both of those formats, right fuel, right time, what Dan's leading, and Norwegian methods, if you've got two high intensity sessions that are like hours apart, you may need to absolutely take on some material carbohydrate in setting you up for the second session. I would say just in clinical practice too, we've seen athletes that, you know, sought to adopt these methods, and they always had this back of the mind fear of how much fat to take, and they didn't take enough, and then they backed off on carbohydrate, and then they got into a very caloric deficit, and that's not a healthy space to be in.
Right, for sure.
So,
do you feel in that? Let me just go back to that, the example you gave on two high intensity workouts a day. They don't have much time to, you know, refuel right afterwards. Would your recommendations be to, like, after that first high intensity training session before the second one, to speed that glycogen maximization recovery, you name it, whatever we're trying to do here? My question is, would you recommend them consuming fluids and calories immediately after that first workout, or wait 30, 60, 90 minutes? Or like, what have you seen, I guess, best practice in that Norwegian based model?
I mean, and honestly, I just quite frank, we are literally real time beginning to work with this. So
we
haven't got years of experience in it.
Yeah.
But what I would say is that to me, it makes sense in the spirit that if those transporters, they typically remain open in the muscle cell to allow glucose to come in for some time after the session's complete, my sense would be is to take them fairly quickly after the session to begin the replenishment. And we know that the transport's open, if you will, for bringing that in fairly rapidly. The second thing that we've done a fair bit of research on, and it's really ties out to what we built in our recovery product, is that high-dose glutamine can accelerate the replenishment of muscle glycogen. In fact, we would suggest that for going into race week, and you're really trying to ensure that muscle liver glycogen is well stocked, but you're not over triggering insulin responses by taking a lot of carbohydrate on the last week, we do that through fairly high dose glutamine on race week. The same applies to the scenario you gave on two back-to-back high intensity sessions in a day. We think the role of glutamine to really accelerate that session to session makes a ton of sense.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Leighton. As we're getting towards the end here of our conversation with you, I wanted to ask you in terms of thinking of the female athletes out there, because I know we've got Dan Plews and Zach Bitter, a couple other high-end elite professional male athletes that are kind of representing as fuels. Any comments or additions or nuances there that you would want to mention for those female athletes listening that might have concerns, like, is this product set okay for me because I'm not a high-end professional male athlete. Anything you want to add there? And then if there's anything else that you wanted to mention that we haven't discussed, just wanted to offer that opportunity.
Yeah, I think for ladies, look, I'm less concerned about the formulations. I do feel that I've seen a number of times where that fear of fat on making the shift plays out. We've seen it play out in females a little more, and they can get into this caloric deficit. And of course, in a hormonal construct, that can wreak havoc. Right. By the way, this doesn't apply just to a lower carb structure only. It applies to, in general, ensuring that sufficient calories, and I would say particularly fat-based calories, are really important for hormonal health. Whether that's essential fatty acids or you know, beyond that, just broadly speaking, fatty acid intake. So that's the first thing I would say. But as it relates to, like, we have plenty of ladies working with our product, have done over the years. You know, we've now dosed somewhere north of 20,000 doses. I would say that S-Fuels is now more tested and researched in the use of medium chain triglycerides and glutamine for endurance sport fueling than any other company. And wow. I don't think, like, the reactions we've had, just to maybe put a twist it around another way, we've had 3 cases of athletes that have a reaction to coconut because coconut's a nut. Mm-hmm. So we've had some reactions there. But again, 3 out of 20,000. So it's never perfect, but, it's fairly good. We now have, I think, the last 1,000 product reviews, or it's just shy of 1,000, actually, it's somewhere between 900 and 1,000, are sitting between 94 and 95% 4 or 5 star product rating.
And Layton, are you getting more, like, what sports are more represented in those reviews? Is it more ultra running? Is it more triathlon? What are you seeing?
Yeah, the core, I would say the core of the business grew up in triathlon.
Okay.
Increasing, because of Zach Bitter, and we've just started with some professional marathoners, we're seeing that market come in, and then we're getting the beginnings of, and we haven't even tried here yet, gravel bikers and just cycling, period.
Right.
We did I mentioned earlier about these 8 projects we did. One of the projects we work on a professional athlete was Hayden Wild. He's a New Zealand athlete. Mm-hmm. We worked with him going into the Olympic Games in Tokyo. He medaled there. Christian Blumenfeld was in front of him. Alex Yee was in front of him. And then Hayden bronzed. And, you know, we worked with him because we had come off projects with Ironman athletes, ultra runners, both 100-mile female and male. We set the world record, 100-mile world record also. But what we thought is, hey, let's see how this applies to a 2-hour session race, or even shorter than that, like the Super League format, right? Which is even, it's shorter, but you do multiple of them in the Super League. So we worked with Hayden on that, and yeah, he medaled at the Olympics. He won the whole Super League series outright. So we feel like, And we feel like actually we need to do more research in this area, to be honest. But we feel like the application of, if you can heighten aerobic adaptions, meaning that you're oxidizing fat at higher intensities, remember that when you're burning fat for fuel, there is not a lactate outcome, mm-hmm. right? And if we can, out of the 100% of substrate being burnt, more of that be fat-based, is the lactate production lower, and is the retention of glycogen higher, so that the finish can be stronger? Well, again, it's a little anecdotal, to be honest, but there was a study that just got published about 6 months ago, UCI. It was a metabolomic study, which means that in the field of in the field, as opposed to in the lab, in the field of racing, they looked at this Grand Tour team, and they studied all the metabolites in the blood during a race and after the race. And it was interesting to note that the most consistent factor that was tied out to the best performances in the team was their fat oxidation efficiency.
Oh.
And the last stage of that 6-day race was the most intense stage. And it was the athletes that had the best fat oxidation that could, you know, the last part of that last, so the final stage was 200 plus kilometers and the last 7 kilometers was all elevation. Mm-hmm. And the folks that did the best on that, the ones that had the highest fat oxidation.
And you're referring to highest fat oxidation in reference to like their VO2 or max heart rate, right? So just so listeners understand that that's in relation to their overall fitness too.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
There was a study by Franson in 2017 or 2011. I'd have to look at the date. But basically, he called out that VO2 max and fat oxidation efficiency are the most determinant factors of performance outcomes. And he studied Ironman athletes. Mm-hmm. This study that came out last year on the UCI cycling team was looking at all different metabolites, right? Mm-hmm. But it was interesting that they specifically called out that the most correlation between the best performances was that of their fat oxidation efficiency.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I think we're seeing that a lot in the Tour de France too, with these cyclists. And, you know, I think times are changing, right? And that's what I love about what you're doing in the space and just the education piece of it. And I do believe we're slowly getting to the point of, you know, having a lot of our consumers, listeners, and athletes really understand the science behind it and, you know, using it for the right cause, right? And for the right purpose, for sure. And boy, I feel like listeners right now have gotten just a tease, we're just waving that carrot in front of them. They're like, oh my gosh, this guy is so fascinating to listen to. And we would love to have you back because there's so much more just to talk about in addition to your next gen products, but also just a little bit of the science of fat oxidation and how we kind of loop in daily nutrition. Like we would love to have you back on if you would be willing to.
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, we haven't even talked about, you know, some of the nutritional elements of recovery, like ketones, like there's so much talk about ketones and performance. I'd love to talk to you about ketones and recovery. We haven't talked about actually increasing studies now coming out showing the metabolic impacts of high carb intake for athletes. You're assuming that you've got immunity because you do all this training. Uh-huh. Not at all. So we haven't talked about that. Love to talk about that. We've got athletes ourselves that, you know, find out by wearing CGMs, they're diabetic, and in 4 weeks we've turned it around.
Right.
So yeah, there's a number of other topics we could go deep on, Bob, for sure.
Okay. So Dina and I just made the notes of those because those are high on my priority list for sure. Because those are the discussions that I'm having with athletes almost every day, right? It's like, okay, let's really talk. And I think for a lot of listeners and athletes, it's, you know, remember it's health first. We need to be healthy in order to perform. It's not just all about performance. So we do definitely appreciate that message, Leighton. And listeners, don't worry. We'll have I feel like you're going to be a regular contributor here, Leighton.
That'd be great. Yeah, no, I look forward to it. And just awesome to meet you both. And
you too. Thank you too. So well, let's finish up. We've got these really quick high five questions just so the listeners can kind of get to know a little bit more about Leighton. But we're just going to blast these at you. Whatever you want to answer, you can answer. But our first question is, do you have a typical morning routine?
Yeah, I meditate for an hour, and then I usually try to do some type of exercise, either in the pool or on the bike.
Okay.
Awesome. Leighton, do you have a favorite indulgence food or beverage?
I love cheese, all forms. beverage, no. I mean, I drink a lot of green tea, but I wouldn't say it's a favorite as such.
Okay. So it sounds like you've traveled the world and then some. If can you pinpoint one place, like just a favorite place you'd love to visit or go?
Oh, that's easy. That's easy. It's Chamonix, France, where the UTMB is. It's magic on earth. Yeah.
Yes.
Totally agree. Okay. Question number four. What is a favorite book that you have read and would say would be a longtime favorite?
My first, when I was 13, my dad took me to a lecture by, I think, one of the godfathers of naturopathic medicine called Bernard Jensen. And he wrote a book called Nature Has a Remedy. And I began reading it at 13, and it probably what I fell in love with the whole naturopathic medicine side. And still to this day, I look back at it and things he wrote there, I know were kind of wrong at the time.
Yeah.
But, anyway, it was probably what set me on a path for my life today. Oh, yeah.
Neat.
That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So possibly the toughest question yet. If you only had one piece of advice to give to athletes, only one piece, what would that one piece of advice be?
Probably sleep more, train less.
Oh, look at that. We've had that a couple times, man. The power of sleep. I love it. I love
Nothing works without that. Yeah.
It's so true. It's so true. Yeah. Well, again, thank you. We are already going to schedule in terms of our topic list, which you mentioned, we'll talk about ketones. We'll talk about the whole high carb thing with athletes not being immune to those health consequences. But we'll have you back on, Leighton. We'll put everything in our show notes in terms of where to find S-Fuels. We'll find some of those papers, might have to ask you about some of those papers so we can reference those in our show notes. But
yeah,
sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, we just enjoyed spending time with you so much and literally cannot wait until our next time to chat.
Yeah, that'd be great. Nice to meet you both and looking forward to it, and stay well.
Yes, thank you. You also. All right, listeners, catch us on the next episode.
We hope you enjoyed that conversation with Leighton Phillips of S-Fuels. Be sure to check them out and familiarize yourself. Give the products a try. It's very unique fueling and definitely works for a lot of athletes. Stay tuned for next week's episode when we talk about nutrient timing for ultra running and some then and now and where we're going. So it's a really fun chat that Bob and I have coming up for you. If you have a sports nutrition question, drop us an email, hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. Include your question, where you're tuning in from, and we greatly appreciate hearing from you. We also love your support in promoting our podcast. So if you have a minute, give us a 5-star rating over on Spotify or Apple Pods. And it'd be even more fun if you could take a screenshot of this episode or one of your other favorites and tag ISN Podcast on Instagram. Share with your friends and all the people. It helps us be able to share this podcast and continue to grow. If you'd like to learn more about the services that Bob and I both offer, got a lot of cool stuff for you, everything from online programs to nutrition coaching services and different kinds of biomarker and physiological testing services. You can find Bob over at energyperformance.com, energyperformance.com, or myself, Dina, over at nutritionmechanic.com. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the hosts and the guests involved and do not represent a replacement for medical consultation with your doctor. The information and opinions provided here are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or medical condition. This podcast is for information, education, and entertainment purposes only.